This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. My name is Don Nolan, and I'm filling in this afternoon for Steve Shoemaker, who is out of town during the taping of this show. So we won't be taking any calls this afternoon, so you don't need to call in. If you know your history of religions, you know that one of the major branches of Christendom is often called the Eastern Orthodox tradition. Worldwide, it is estimated that there are close to 300 million adherents to this tradition, including 5 million in the United States. The Eastern Church came into being in 1054, if depending on your interpretation of the history of Christendom, after what is known as the Great Schism with the Western or Roman Church. Depending on your view of Christianity, it was the Roman Church that came into being in 1054 and not the Eastern Church, but we won't be discussing that topic this afternoon. The center of the Eastern Church continued to be Constantinople up until 1453 with the fall of Constantinople to the Ottoman armies of Sultan Mehmed II. And no doubt you also know that the name of Constantinople was changed to Istanbul. But perhaps you do not know that there remains to this day a patriarchy of the Greek Orthodox Church still operating in Istanbul today. It is known as the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople, and it has an archbishop known as Bishop Bartholomew. Though there is no pope in the Greek Orthodox tradition, Bishop Bartholomew has been called the first among equals. Unfortunately, numerous restrictions have been placed on this most ancient Orthodox church known as the Mother Church, and we are here today to talk about those restrictions and a major effort to encourage religious freedom in Turkey. We're extremely honored to have a very distinguished guest with us this afternoon. He is the Greek Orthodox Bishop Dimitrios of Mokissos, did I pronounce that correctly?
Mokissos.
Who currently serves as Chancellor of the Holy Metropolis of Chicago and as Auxiliary Bishop of the Greek Orthodox Metropolis of Chicago. Welcome to our humble program, Your Grace.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And we also have with us John Ackerman and Frank Liguros.
Correct.
Who are on a committee related to the topic of our show, and that is an attempt to put a resolution on the floor of the Illinois Senate relating to religious freedom, and we're going to hear all about that today. I hope that my description in the setup of the show is reasonably accurate. Did I get it all okay?
I think you did a fine job. The only thing I would offer is that the Archbishop of Constantinople, New Rome, and Ecumenical Patriarch, which is his full title, is referred to as Patriarch Bartholomew.
Patriarch Bartholomew. Right. Very good. Well, we're here to discuss a campaign to urge the Illinois General Assembly to adopt a resolution to support the Ecumenical Patriarchate. On January 27th, Bishop Dimitrios, I understand you held several press conferences over a period of time, and last January 27th, you had a conference to talk about this resolution. Can you tell us a little bit about what the resolution is about and why you're here?
Sure. Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure to be in Champaign, visiting the Parish of the Three Hierarchs, the Greek Orthodox Church here in Champaign. We thought it'd be a great opportunity to kick off our efforts to inspire the Illinois Senate to pass the resolution. The resolution was introduced back in 2009, I believe. It has passed the House of Representatives, and now we're waiting for it to come before the Senate to pass. The resolution really has five major points. It basically talks about the religious freedom and expression of the Ecumenical Patriarchate. The five points that we want the people to be aware of, that are probably not aware, that firstly, the ecumenical patriarch has some impositions imposed upon him, not in his person, but in the office of the ecumenical patriarch. The person who can be elected ecumenical patriarch must be a Turkish citizen, and oftentimes the government would have been involved in saying who can be on the list of candidates and who cannot. With the election of Patriarch Bartholomew, the Turkish government did not involve itself. However, the possibility exists. So we need to make sure that's kept in check.
For future elections. Mm-hmm. He is a Turkish citizen, I understand.
Of course. Patriarch Bartholomew is a Turkish citizen. He was born and raised on the island of Imvros in Greek. I don't remember the Turkish name of the island. He also served in the Turkish army, and a lot of people don't know that. So he definitely is a Turkish citizen. There have been some attempts, good attempts, on the part of the Turkish government to rectify the situation, not by changing the constitution, but by working around it. And what they did by the efforts of His All Holiness and their agreement with the Turkish government was to allow and grant Turkish citizenship to metropolitans, high-ranking bishops or archbishops, if you will, of the ecumenical patriarchate throughout the world. So therefore, that the pot widens now. They've gotten around the dynamic that the person has to be Turkish citizen by granting citizenship to others outside mm-hmm. of Turkey. About 15 of our metropolitans around the world have taken advantage of that opportunity. It also enhances the character of the patriarchate in that it makes it more of an international phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So we see the far reaches, not just a minority in Turkey. The second dynamic that the resolution addresses is calling for the recognition of the ecumenical status of the patriarchate. It's not a legal entity right now, which is the third point. Mm-hmm. The word ecumenical from the Greek, oikoumene, means the whole inhabited earth. Mm-hmm. He is the first among equals. He's not a pope. He doesn't have universal jurisdiction like the pope claims to have. Mm-hmm. However, the Turkish government feels that the term ecumenical is an attempt on our part to set up another state within a state. And by Orthodox tradition and canon law, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. I think that requires education on our part to the Turkish authorities.
Now, I know that there's 5 points to your resolution. Mm-hmm. Could we just dwell on the first two that you've just
Whatever
presented?
Whatever you like, yeah.
At the press conference, John, you mentioned an analogy to what would it be like if a country required all eligible candidates for the pope to be Italian?
Mm-hmm.
You want to elaborate on that to get an analogy?
Yeah, what I said is imagine waking up tomorrow and opening the newspaper, and there's the headline that the Italian government's demanding that the pope has to be Italian and that he has to go to school in Italy and that, by the way, we're going to confiscate all of your land and, oh, we're closing the theology school.
Right.
The world would be in an uproar. Right now, interestingly enough, they're in an uproar themselves, the Roman Catholic faith, on the amount of cardinals that each part of the – so,
right.
I mean, just that little section will cause an uproar. We're dealing with a lot more suppression and have been dealing with it for a long time, and that's what this is looking to correct.
Going back, the suppression all the way back far into the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And also into the interference of the cardinals. Because they do meet and they do vote for the pope, so mm-hmm. We have that interference as well. So
right.
That's another concern.
How is there a census of Orthodox community in Turkey?
Consensus? What do you mean?
A population?
There's less than 2,000 Greek Orthodox faithful in Turkey today.
Has it declined since, 1922, 23?
1923, mm-hmm. significantly. It has declined significantly.
In 1923, for the sake of our listeners, what's the significance of that date?
1923, the modern state of Turkey was born. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the father of the Turkish nation, was a secular leader and really secularized and modernized Turkey. He did a great deal of good for the country mm-hmm. of Turkey, not necessarily for religious expression and freedom. Also in 1922 and 23 specifically, there was a forced exchange of populations between Greece and Turkey that was put together by Atatürk and Eleftherios Venizelos.
Right.
Not necessarily a good thing now. We see that people that were Greek Greek faithful, Greek Orthodox people living in living in Constantinople and also in Turkey, throughout Turkey, were forcibly removed from their ancestral homes and moved to Greece where they never were, where they never were born. That would be like taking a second or third generation Greek American from Champagne and saying, you must go to Greece to live.
You mentioned this was an early form or maybe even the beginning of ethnic cleansing.
Ethnic cleansing. They wanted a pure Turkey, and the response was that, well, they went to Greece, but Greece had a hard time accepting them. There were no jobs. There was no availability, and Greece expelled the Turks living there. So it caused a lot of animosity, and we see the ramifications of that today. They were living perfectly peaceful with each other. Mm-hmm. And there was no reason for this upheaval.
Right.
You hear stories all the time about it.
Well, is there any tracking of decline in numbers of Orthodox community in Turkey after 1923?
Yes. I don't have that statistic.
But has it been going down?
Yes.
Yes, significantly.
I believe the number was, if I'm pulling it from my mind right, I believe the number beforehand was 200,000 to 300,000. And it's dwindled down to 2,000.
After 1923.
Before 1923. And then because of that exodus, like he said, where they exchanged, that they moved that many out.
They moved quite a few. But then the next significant event that happened was the pogrom in 1950, I believe, where Greek businesses were targeted.
Oh, that's right.
And Greek shop owners. They were some of the premier shop owners, again, living fine and peacefully. But a rumor had started about the possibility of recapturing Constantinople, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, people who were neighbors with each other saw each other in different light. Mm-hmm. And the pogrom started, and that was another exodus in the early 50s. I don't know if it was exactly 1950. Part of my mind tells me 50 or 54, but I don't think the actual date's that important. Right. I know it was in the early 50s.
And then there was another issue also around the time when the invasion of Crete, the Turkish invasion of Crete.
Right.
There was another division as well as far as that there was pressure put on them.
Tortured history.
Cyprus. I'm sorry. I said Crete. It was Cyprus. Sorry. The invasion of Cyprus.
The reason I stopped to dwell on this a little bit, my first reaction when I read this restriction, which I gather has been around for quite a while, is that it is a recent attempt to try to diminish the community, but apparently that restriction's been on the books for a long time.
Yeah, but what we've seen with it is the interpretation of how it's enacted has changed. So the government itself has become more secular at some times and less secular at others. Those upheavals that we talked about.
Depends upon nationalist movements in Turkey.
Exactly, internal politics in Turkey. And right now we're seeing them become less secular and more tolerant for the religions. But at those times when they've done that, that's when more land has been taken or churches have been closed. I believe the monastery was only closed. It wasn't in 1923 or was later?
The Holy Trinity?
Yeah.
The theological school was closed in the 1970s.
So that's what Halki? I was thinking.
Yes.
Halki, right.
So it didn't all take place at once. It kind of took place in stages of more and more buildup.
So are you hopeful that changes that are now taking place, political changes in Turkey, will bode well for getting rid of this requirement that they are involved and have veto and that it has to be a Turkish citizen who?
I believe this current government in Turkey has been the best for us as Orthodox Christians because of their religious bent, I would say, and their openness. The fact that the orphanage that was taken has been restored to the Orthodox Church there. I mentioned earlier in our press conference that 194 hectares of land was returned to Halki, our theological school, that was confiscated back when the school closed in 1971. But the land is a forest. 194 hectares is about 380
I think it's closer to 800 acres.
But 800 acres. It's a large amount of land.
Large piece it's on an island off the coast of Istanbul.
The island is called Hebidedad in Turkish. Hebidedad. In Greek, it's called Halki. And that's where it's a monastery, but also was our theological school.
I understand that Archbishop Bartholomew went to school there.
Archbishop Bartholomew is a graduate of Halkey Seminary, yes, right. Indeed.
Now, they did say they were going to return it, but it hasn't opened as of yet, Halkey. So we're still waiting for that action to take place.
It's beginning to look positive.
Mm-hmm. I think with the return of the properties around it, it's looking very positive.
Yeah. They're also, Turkey's also, to answer that question, too, getting a lot of pressure from not only the Greek Orthodox faith for this, but they're also getting pressure, political pressure, and that they would like to be a member of the European mm-hmm. Union. And when they last applied, the European right. Union turned them down for several reasons, but one that was highlighted was until the patriarch's understanding is taken care of, we're not going to allow you in. So the European Union
item.
Did that, and that was at the urging of the Pope. The Pope was one behind the scenes saying,
right.
"You." And I would have to see. I don't know for a fact, but I would imagine that he looks at this as an issue for him as well. For that synopsis of Italy, could easily happen.
Right.
And
right.
you know, if you don't protect somebody else, it could happen to you just as easily. So they're looking at it.
And the president of the United States followed up in the Turkish parliament in his first term, and he addressed that. And that was tied into the EU issue of Turkey joining EU. So he did address that these five steps were there, they exist, and that the Turkish parliament does need to take a serious look at it.
Right.
Now, Turkey's next step for entrance into the European Union takes place this year when their application is reexamined. So mm-hmm. that makes passage of this this spring. That examination is going to be in the fall.
So you're hoping this will have some impact.
Yeah, we think that this could send a message, not only because being passed in Illinois does sound a little silly on how could it react to international politics, but one, they're being reviewed, so it's another letter coming in right when they're being reviewed about it. But the other one is you got to remember, we are the home state of Barack Obama. So
right.
the president speaking favorably for it, plus a letter from his home state, you would think that would have some merit to give this some special.
In addition to that as well, the Metropolis is working to pass the resolution in the Minnesota Senate as we speak as well, and Indiana's to follow. So there are three states there together to help that cause.
Yeah,
so it has a significant
voice. So the three remaining states are in your Metropolis?
The three remaining states of our Metropolis.
Metropolis.
42 states have passed.
I was just going to really say.
Yeah,
so
the bill already.
So three that haven't. Where are the other states?
Maryland, New Hampshire, and
I don't remember offhand.
I don't remember the other ones. But, I remember Montana. They're out in the Northwest Territories where there really isn't a large representation of Metropolis there. They're in a metropolis, but mm-hmm. they're kind of scattered, the parishes that are there.
Just want to remind our listeners, this is Keeping the Faith, and we're talking to Greek Orthodox Bishop Demetrios, who currently serves as the Chancellor of the Holy Metropolis of Chicago, and as Auxiliary Bishop of the Greek Orthodox Metropolis of Chicago. He is here to talk with us today about a resolution produced, as I understand it, from a committee called Friends of the Ecumenical Patriarch, a committee in Peoria. Is that the correct name?
Well, yeah, but this is the committee that is making the push, the organized committee making the push here in Illinois. It's actually the resolution idea came from the Order of St. Andrew. We call it the Archons, which mm-hmm. is the protectors of the Greek Orthodox faith. Defenders of the faith.
Right.
They're the national organization that really should be given credit for organizing this effort across the nation.
And the gentleman who was just talking to us is John Ackerman, who is on that committee. And we also have with us in the studio Frank Ligurus, who's also on the committee. And we're talking about the presentation of this resolution to the Illinois Senate. Now, you have mentioned that there are five items in the resolution, and we have talked in some detail about the first one, the government interference in the patriarchal elections. You also mentioned non-recognition of the ecumenical status. I take it that the term ecumenical is offensive to certain religious sensibilities in the government? Or
I think it's not necessarily religious sensibilities. I think it's a political fear. They believe, I think incorrectly, that the patriarchy is trying to become a Vatican, an independent state within the state.
So they're worried about proselytization and the word ecumenical?
No, I think they're worried about creating a separate part of Turkey that's not a separate state. The Vatican State is a separate country, as you know. This is an impossibility in Orthodox thought and theology. So that's not even possible for us to do, nor do we want to. The term ecumenical means a whole inhabited earth, that he is the first among equals, that he is the spiritual leader of the Eastern Orthodox Church worldwide, not on the level of a pope, but on a level of calling together the other heads of autocephalous or self-governing churches.
Right.
So that I truly believe that that issue can be overcome with a little bit of education.
So just the term itself is a little bit of consciousness raising about what's not to worry about.
Right, exactly. In fact, when President Obama went to Turkey during his first term, the U.S. ambassador to Turkey held a reception in honor of Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew. Turkish officials could not attend because the invitation was worded in honor of the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople. So the ecumenical was the difficult part for them.
The power of words.
Yes, indeed.
Well, and it needs to be pointed out as well. I think he's correct. I think, as always, His Grace is absolutely 100% on board with this. But you have to remember from their vantage point of looking at it as well, the Pope is the descendant of St. Peter, the religious descendant. The Patriarch is the descendant of St. Andrew. They are brothers. So when they look at that and they say, one brother is going to want the same standard as the other, I think that that fear that he put out, that that was what the angle was absolutely true. But back in the Byzantine Empire, there was never the empire that preceded them, there was never a patriarch that was the king. They were completely separate roles, identified clearly. He was involved, but never, like you said, in running a country.
And often in tension with the emperor.
Yes,
indeed. Indeed. Interestingly enough, if you go to Constantinople or Istanbul, the Patriarchate, at the Fanar, which is our word for the Patriarchate, the Fanar.
How do you spell that?
P-H-A-N-A-R.
Okay.
Fanar. It means lantern or lighthouse. You walk into the main building, and on one side there's a mosaic of Andrew giving the first bishop of first patriarch of Constantinople giving the gospels to Stachys, the second bishop, to show the progression. Okay, on the opposite wall there is a mosaic. I won't call it an icon necessarily, done the exact same style of Mehmet II, the conqueror, giving a firman, a legal document, to the first patriarch after the fall of Constantinople, 1453, Scholarios, giving him this document that says, be patriarch as your predecessors with all the rights and privileges. So the Ottoman Empire continued, wanted to make sure this continued, and gave this legal document called the firman to the first patriarch after the fall of Constantinople. So you see the continuity. Now, by all the other impositions, by not calling it ecumenical, it's really going against that document.
Right.
Then again, the Ottoman Empire did end, as we know, after the modern state of Turkey comes in. So that's an interesting dynamic.
So just historically speaking, are you suggesting that there was more interfaith tolerance before the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, and with the rise of secularism and Ataturk, there were more restrictions?
I would say absolutely. There were, if you compare the two, there was much more freedom and expression under the Ottomans than there were under the modern Turkish Republic in the 20s. At least now things are starting to let up. Under the Ottomans, there was a millet system. So we had the Rum millet, the Roman people, or this time the Greeks here, right? They are governed or ruled by the patriarch. He's now the leader of the Rum millet. There's other millets. There's other ethnic pockets. And they had a very complicated system of governance. They had caliphates and different sultans in charge of different things, as you probably know. So the Ottoman Empire really was a big hodgepodge of interfaith activity.
Right. Also a huge, sprawling bureaucracy.
Yes. Now, I don't want to give the impression that everything was wonderful under the Ottomans. It wasn't, okay? It wasn't as living in this beautiful country is today. However, I think that there was more freedom of religious expression and tolerance and living together. than there was in the early stages of the modern Turkish Republic.
And I think part of that, too, is, as Grace pointed out earlier, when they went from the Ottoman Empire to the modern state, they just devoided all religion. Mm-hmm. So then it became, right. If we allow this minority to have special, what about the majority of our people? Mm-hmm. How are they going to look? So, you know, that I think that played a lot into it, that they had to be a little bit more harsh on the minorities because they had the majority that they were trying to suppress as well. Mm-hmm. A side effect is it did get a lot more constraint.
So they're similar, like a 1-2 punch from the secular communist states mm-hmm. for a good part of the 20th century as well.
And as Grace pointed out at the press conference, this does help them as well because this is inching forward to more religious tolerance.
Right. And it is surprising how few people who just have a smattering of knowledge of Islam don't know that Islam does have a tradition of toleration and living in harmony in various periods in its history and in various countries. Spain is one example. But I hadn't known that this was a somewhat similar quality in the Ottoman Empire with respect to the Orthodox
Absolutely.
Tradition. Well, we've talked about two of the items on the resolution that you're putting before the State Assembly in Springfield. The first one was government interference with patriarchal elections. The second one we've been discussing is non-recognition of ecumenical status. Can you tell us a little bit about number three, which is labeled no legal identity?
Since they don't recognize the position or the title, they also confiscated a lot of the land then, saying, well, if this isn't an individual, then how can he own land? So they closed a lot of the schools, confiscated a lot of, you know, the theology schools went along with some of the others we'll go over. But the legal status is tied really to the confiscation of the property, which is number five, and that they just they use that as the reasoning for confiscation, and we're asking for the return of that stuff.
But also the non-legal entity doesn't allow for people to work at the Patriarchate, foreign nationals, clergy from the United States. So to get around things of that nature, you're on a tourist visa. You come in and help out for 3 months or more.
Then you have to leave.
Then you have to leave the country, and then you come back. So it's an interesting dynamic in what they have to do just to get along.
Is work at the Patriarchy mostly at St. Andrew's Church in Istanbul, or are there other places where this—
The Patriarchate, the Fanar, has mm-hmm. a chapel attached to it called St. George.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking of St. Andrew's, but no. The church itself is called St. George.
Okay.
It moved there. I don't remember the exact date in history. You might, of course, remember Hagia Sophia, Church of Holy Wisdom. That's where the Patriarchate was first around.
Which is now a museum.
It's now a museum. Ataturk did do that because it was at one time after it was a church, a magnificent church. It became a mosque, and it was changed from a mosque to a museum.
Right.
And today it's part of UNESCO's protected sites, mm-hmm. which we're grateful for. I know it's getting off the subject, but one interesting thing about Hagia Sophia.
Oh, you can spend all day on Hagia Sophia.
When Mehmet II, the conqueror, came in, he saw the grandeur and the beauty of it, and he said that his world, the Muslim world, was not ready for this. So he whitewashed over all the mosaics.
Right.
Now, we would think, oh, how horrible. But today—
They've been protected.
It protected the mosaics. So they're going painstakingly removing the plaster and the whitewash mm-hmm. and revealing the beauty that exists. So we're grateful for that, at least. At least we have that wonder that was built under Justinian. So it's an amazing, amazing architectural wonder. And interestingly enough, the dome has been imitated by Islam for centuries afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where it comes from. That's where their domes originate from. And once you do it there, they do it everywhere. So, but that's the legal entity issue. It's called St. George, the church at the Fanar. And that's where most of the work happens, yes.
And then it further complicated because they can't get the proper staffing at the Patriarchate because of the work visas and to have people come in
so
and stay.
The quantity, so, just simply the quantity of work is such that this is a burden.
Of course.
And if that is lifted, do you expect significant numbers of more people to come?
I don't know. Significant, but it certainly will make it easier for them to stay.
Okay.
And legal.
I think also it would affect, too, His Grace was talking earlier about the work environment or the visiting environment when different bishops go to visit, mm-hmm. that they can't wear their garb outside, that they have to change to street clothes because it's not allowed.
Right.
So I think the legal status being relaxed would also affect that. And then, you know, there's the whole thing also of being able to get there safely and get away and get out of that part.
And visitors that go to the Patriarchate and mm-hmm. things that have happened in the past. So it would relax that issue, too, for all.
So there are physical risks to members of the church? Going into and coming out, you have to
the Fanar, to the Patriarchate.
Right,
uh-huh. It's located in a very traditional Muslim neighborhood. The reality is I don't know how the neighbors like having the Patriarchate there.
Mm-hmm.
But the official position of the government is, of course, that the Patriarchate is there. Of course we're going to protect the Patriarchate. Of course it has its right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've gone freely in and out with no incidents, and I don't know of any particular incidents that caused harm.
Do you have to remove your dress?
I do. Up to recently, it was against the law. Now it's not against the law, but it's kind, and the patriarch would prefer that the clergy maintain the tradition that was imposed upon them. That mm-hmm. was a dark suit, white shirt with a dark tie. Once you get to the Patriarchate, you can put on your robes and clerical
right.
attire within the walls of the Patriarchate. To roam the streets of Istanbul in this is not looked upon to welcome.
Mm-hmm. You certainly would stand out.
Yeah, we would. But then again, you wonder, with all the Muslim garb, you don't know how much we stand out.
Well, Ataturk also imposed restrictions on Muslim dress as well.
The fez was
even-handed, right?
Right. One big swoop. I mean, the only people that were allowed in modern Turkey to wear religious garb in the street was the ecumenical patriarch,
right.
the head imam, and the head rabbi.
Right.
That's it.
Well, let's talk about item number four, the closing of the seminary. This is the Halki, Theological School of Halki, to train clergy. Tell us a little bit about why that happened in 1971 and what your hopes are for getting it back functioning.
Theological school is at the Holy Trinity Monastery on the island of Halki, or as I said, modern-day Heybeliadad. It's one of the Princess Islands. It's a beautiful location.
Supposedly very peaceful and quiet.
It is, also because there's nobody there.
So no, right.
That would help. But it's a beautiful place. They have a magnificent library with some interesting books.
I did notice online just an incredible collection apparently. Is it used at all?
It is used for research. Research does go on there. There is a dean, actually a metropolitan, who's the head of the monastery, but he will be running the school when it opens. The current patriarch is a graduate of Halki, of the theological school. It closed in 1971, and it hasn't opened since. We have a lot of promises. It hasn't come to fruition, but I'm hopeful that it will come to fruition, especially with that return of the land around it.
Mm.
That's a good sign, and we'll see where it goes.
This really is a key point, too, because the requirements placed – the restrictions placed on the patriarch by the Turkish government, you know, he has to be Turkish. He has to be educated in Turkey.
Right. And so if you don't get rid of that one, then you can only send Turkish citizens to the seminary.
And by the way, we're closing the school. So, yeah, you've ended up basically saying that the faith cannot continue forward. So I don't know if that necessarily was the plan or if it was an accident, but mm-hmm. it is what it is, and it needs to be corrected so that the a church that has been there for centuries can continue forward.
What are the prospects?
They're good. They're very good. And the President of the States has spoken about it and called for it. I believe it's very
Obama.
Good. Yes, mm-hmm. President Obama has called for it. The patriarch is calling for it. The patriarch also has supported Turkey's entrance into the European Union,
mm-hmm.
As has Greece. And I believe that if Halki opens, it will not be only good for the Greek Orthodox Church and the community, but very good for Turkey. It'll become an international Orthodox center. Mm. Orthodox scholars and students from around the world will flock there. Mm-hmm. So that could only be good for Turkey's tourism and mm-hmm. Turkey's national product, but most importantly to highlight this as a place of interfaith cooperation. And I don't even like using the word tolerance, but moving beyond tolerance.
Tolerance is a problematic term, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but moving beyond tolerance and coexistence, you know.
Mm-hmm. You tolerate generally that which you disapprove of.
Exactly. Yeah. So we want to move beyond that. We want mm-hmm. to live together in harmony and peace, mutual respect. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if that school opens, that would be an icon to the world of how that can happen through education and learning.
Mm-hmm. When was it first built? How old is it?
That's something I've said slipped by mind.
I don't have remember. That research.
It's been there through the entire 20th century? Do you have
Yes. So it's pretty old.
Before 1900?
Yes.
Okay.
Considerably.
So,
and this item was a key item also laid out to them with the respect to the patriarch, the needing to clarify that before they could enter the EU. This was one of the major points that they pointed out was that this is a major step that needs to be accomplished. Mm-hmm. So there has been a lot of attention on this point of the thing. And like as Grace said, this is one that's really started recently with them returning the land around it mm-hmm. to look like this is a very good possibility that this could be resolved.
I take it you've been there?
Yes, I have.
And have you used the library?
I haven't used it. I've seen it uh-huh. and wanted to stay, but wasn't able to. Interestingly enough, they have groundskeepers. Everything is ready. It's all there.
So it's been cared for.
Oh, very much so, meticulously.
Paid for by?
The Patriarchate.
The Patriarchate. Mm-hmm. So for 40-some-odd years, it's just been sitting there as a library.
But they do use it for conferences and for other gatherings.
Ah.
So it's in use, yeah. But it's not used for its primary purpose.
I see.
Now, the other good news with – which goes into point number 5 if you want to head that direction.
No, go ahead.
Was the confiscation of properties because of the legal realities. The Patriarchate was not a legal entity, and then over the years, monasteries and church buildings and orphanages and homes and apartments and schools and land was confiscated. Mm-hmm. Now, recently a major orphanage was returned to the Patriarchate, and that happened through the efforts of the Archons especially. Major talks in Brussels at the court, what's it called? The
World Court?
That's it. Mm-hmm. Right. Where the Turkish judge sided with the Patriarchate on that. That orphanage, we just received word recently in a letter from the Patriarch, that orphanage will be used as an interfaith center on environmental concerns mm-hmm. that the Patriarch is instituting. As you probably know, and your listeners hopefully do know, Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew is known throughout the world as the Green Patriarch. He's very concerned about the environment. He has held international symposia in various parts of the world, from the Arctic Circle to the Amazon to the Mississippi River, and most recently at Halki with Jane Goodall present, and they had a major conference. So having an interfaith international center in Istanbul, mm-hmm. the orphanage turns into that for that usage, I think is a great, great use of that property.
How far off the coast is it? It's on an island off the coast of Istanbul.
Halki, you mean?
Halki.
It's about a 45-minute boat ride away.
Ferry ride.
Yeah, it's very close. He has a boat now which he's able to go mm-hmm. to and from. By the way, I just received a report that the school was founded October 1st of 1844.
Ah.
It's the modern island is called Heybeliadat. It's the second largest of what's called the Princess Islands mm-hmm. in the Sea of Marmara.
So it's got some history to it. It'll be interesting to see that reconstructed. It sounds to me, as I'm listening to you talk about these 5 points,
just real quick, that same item he was looking at, I did think it was interesting to point out that while it was 1844 that school was founded, the monastery on the island was founded for over 1,000 years ago. So it has been ancient history of being into mm-hmm. the Greek Orthodox faith. Mm-hmm. Same happened to be the same article you were looking at.
Uh-huh. Two different cell phones with different parts of the same
yeah.
article. I'm impressed by what seems to be the promise mm-hmm. of all of this. When you, mm-hmm. you the way you have described it in here on this program, and the apparent positive or affirmative reaction that you seem to be getting from Turkish officials, you could just be creating a model for interfaith relations that could be emulated around the world, thinking primarily Jerusalem and other places. Is that in the back of your mind, that if you can succeed in getting some concessions on these points, that that'll open the door for a more positive future of relations between Christendom and Islam in Turkey? Or is that
I believe
a hope?
And I think that other Orthodox leaders, Orthodox Christian leaders, believe that the Eastern Orthodox Church, and specifically the Greek Orthodox Church, is probably the best bridge between Islam and Christianity. Mm. We've lived over 400 years under Ottoman occupation and with Islam side by side, sometimes in a harmonious, loving, respectful fashion, other times in an acrimonious relationship. But we've lived side by side. We know each other. I forgot who there was a very famous movie out that said, you don't know somebody well enough until you fight them. So mm-hmm. now that we've been enemies, we now know each other very well. Mm-hmm. And it's time to move beyond that and to heal that division and to be true to our gospel heritage and to be true to the gospels of Jesus Christ, to forgive one another and to move on. We can't dwell on the past negative experiences. We should remember them. We should ask forgiveness where forgiveness is needed to be asked for, but we need to move on, and we need to live together, and we need to live together in peace, harmony, and beyond mm-hmm. tolerance and beyond coexistence. And if we are true Orthodox Christians, we're going to be able to do that. Patriarch Bartholomew has showed us the way. He really has, with his environmental concerns, with his concerns for working with the Turkish authorities. For the first time ever, Turkish foreign minister visited the Patriarchate mm-hmm. and Davutoglu, and he was received beautifully and warmly, and they spoke for who knows how long. When NATO came to Chicago, the foreign minister asked to come to the right. metropolis of Chicago to pay his respects to Metropolitan Iakovos and to meet with myself. We had leaders of the Greek community and of the Turkish community present, and one of the lighter moments was when one of our assistants brought in what I would traditionally call Greek coffee, or what some people would call Turkish coffee. But as the 14
Surely
cups,
we can find some difference.
Well, we did. As when the when the cups came in and my assistant was standing there, I turned to His Excellency and I said, Mr. Foreign Minister, we decided to serve Anatolian coffee today. So he was very pleased with that. Mm-hmm. And we talked about some difficult things related to the church, not necessarily issues that relate to Turkey and Greece. But
this is the Turkish foreign minister visiting for a NATO
yes.
conference.
So we were able to discuss
that. That is a remarkable meeting.
It was a remarkable meeting. And the fact, what made it remarkable was he asked to come. We didn't ask him to come. He asked to come. And I thought that was an amazing progression. So and other organizations and interfaith organizations that we talked about have helped in that dialogue. And mm-hmm. we're going forward. And I think we have to go forward. We can't go backwards. There's no right. time for that. There's less than 2,000 Greek Orthodox faithful living in Istanbul. By the way, you mentioned the name change. If it's okay to take a moment with your listeners.
Please.
Even though the name changed from Constantinople, the city of Constantine, who founded the city, the great mm-hmm. emperor, it became Istanbul, which is actually a Greek word. Mm-hmm. It comes from three Greek words, is, din, poli, which means in classical Greek, to the city. When Turks heard Greeks saying, we're going Istinpoli, we're going to the city, to mm-hmm. the city, Istinpoli, Istinpoli, Istinpoli becomes Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
So you see it still has Greek roots.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with Smyrna or the modern mm-hmm. city of Izmir. It's called Smyrna. Thapame, we're going to go Stin Smirni, Stin Smirni. They use the article. Stin Smirni becomes Izmir. Izmirni, Izmirni, Izmirni becomes Izmir. So it's really a Greek derivative of the word in mm-hmm. Turkish.
That's wonderful hearing you talk that way. Do you, in general terms, are you positive about the future of Abrahamic religions reaching reconciliation after all of these centuries of tortured relations? That's a very big, broad question, but it sounds to me that you've thought those big terms.
I don't think we have an option not to.
Right.
If we don't, we're doomed.
You mentioned the Great Schism that divided the two churches, the two great churches. Mm-hmm. I think something that got overlooked by a lot of people is the reconciliation that took place. The fact that the Pope and the Patriarch did come together and they have reconciled, and that took place
in 1968 in the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. when they lifted the anathemas between East and West. They lifted those documents of excommunication and started our dialogue of love, which is going on today. And we have now delegations of bishops and sometimes the Patriarch and the Pope himself meeting in Rome and in Constantinople on the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul. The Patriarch or delegation from Constantinople go to the Vatican. And the mm-hmm. Feast of St. Andrew on November 30th, a delegation, if not the Pope himself, comes from Rome to visit with the Patriarch. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt that the current Patriarch and the current Pope have been friends for decades when they were both even priests and then bishops. Patriarch Bartholomew has his doctorate from the what's it called? The Gregorium, I believe, in Rome. He studied there, and he has a degree from there. Mm-hmm. So there's good personal ties as well, which always helps.
Interesting.
And where I was going with that is, as you asked, can the religions of Abraham all come together? Well, if the two great brothers can come back together, doesn't that lead you to the hope that everybody can? I mean, the schism between the two brothers was devastating. They've come back together.
Let's hope we don't see smoke down south in Israel at some point. Well, we've talked about all of your five points. Just to review, there's a resolution that you are pushing to go to the Illinois State Senate. The House has already passed it. Mm-hmm. I understand that they passed it 5 years ago as well, but it didn't come up for a vote for various reasons having to do with some people being confused about its authorship, but now we're back here again. The Illinois House, it is hoped, will pass this, and I understand that Senator Mike Frerichs has indicated to you that he would help shepherd that through the Senate.
Yeah, we also got sponsorships a sponsorship the other day from our first senator, which was Darren LaHood out of the Peoria area. Mm-hmm. We expect sponsorship. I think we've got strong ties. We'll be picking another one up on Monday. So that'll give us two downstate leaders. Mm-hmm. We're now looking really to the Chicago area. We extended some olive branches up there to get sponsorship from two Chicago Democrats to back it. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about that would present a nice bipartisan and bi-state. You know, we have a division in the state at bi-state compromise where you have downstate and the Chicago area on board. You have Democrat and you have Republican on board. And we think with a partnership like that this resolution really will have the ability to make it through without a significant issue.
Before we go on, do you want to give to our listeners, for anybody who might be interested in finding out about this or in helping, a website or a phone number?
Yeah, I guess the website would be the Metropolitan's website, which would be
www.chicagometro.org.
Okay.
Chicago.goarch.org is the Metropolis of Chicago's website. Also, the Archon's website, archon.org, would have a more comprehensive listing about the bill itself and where it's been nationally and how it's passed the 42 states.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then here in the state of Illinois, I guess the phone numbers for us would be Frank Liguris is one of the chairman that committee members that is heading this up. His phone number would be 309-208-7749. And then myself, John Ackerman, it would be 309-635-7624. And we'd be able to answer any questions or at least get those answers for you and continue this process forward.
Now, you're hoping to get some action on this during the spring.
That's all. That's the full plan, is we are going to present it in the fall, in the spring, sorry, and we're going to get passage of it in the spring. Mm-hmm. We do not want it to extend into the fall or any further.
What's the next step?
Next states in our metropolis haven't passed it.
Okay. And where are you headed to? Indiana?
Indiana, I think, will be next on our list. Minnesota is doing quite well, actually, with their committee. Mm-hmm. I think they just need some inspiration, but definitely Indiana. Mm-hmm. Once the six states under our jurisdiction are complete, we're hoping – I'm sure that the other states will follow and that the other metropolises that make up the Archdiocese of America will take the lead and go forward.
Just to remind our listeners, 42 states have already passed this same resolution, mm-hmm. same language.
And right. One of the states under the Metropolitan of Chicago, under the committee, under His Grace's leadership, passed this just last year in Missouri. So mm-hmm. it is something that we've seen recent success with this and expect to see the same results, especially when you have the
in
same
Indiana?
Leader leading it.
No, in Missouri it's passed.
I know, but do you think Indiana is a fairly conservative state? I don't know that.
Well, Indiana, we don't have all of Indiana under the jurisdiction of the metropolis of His Grace, but there is another metropolitan there involved. Mm-hmm. But we think they will be successful there as well. They may need some guidance, but we can help.
You have 59 dioceses?
There's 59 parishes.
Parishes?
In the
I'm
metropolis
sorry.
Of
dioceses
Chicago.
Dioceses is some other religion that I can
say. We have metropolises. We have the Archdiocese of America is an archdiocese under the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople. Mm-hmm. The archbishop resides in New York, and he's considered the archbishop of the Eparchial Synod and the president of the synod, of course. He's Archbishop of America, Archbishop Demetrius. Under him, there are eight other metropolitans, and they each have approximately the same amount of parishes, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. In Chicago, we have six states that make up the metropolis of Chicago, mm-hmm. Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And in there, we have 59 parishes, mm-hmm. One parish here in Champaign, of course, and Peoria.
Three hierarchs,
Greek Orthodox Church in Champaign, mm-hmm. which we're very proud of.
And remember, those are the Greek Orthodox churches, but this resolution has much larger stature than that, and that, of course, the Russian Orthodox churches, they would be interested. So mm-hmm. would the Antioch, would others. Yeah. I mean, they all report back to leadership, from the Patriarch. So you would believe that they would be on board with this resolution as well.
Well, I mentioned the 59 parishes because I understand from some research I've done on you in 2012. You've been to 57 of them. How on earth do you do that?
Well, we have a lot of services in our tradition. So Holy Week helps, and mm-hmm. I visit different parishes during Holy Week, sometimes two and three in one day. Mm-hmm. I was able to visit, with the blessings of Metropolitan Iacobus, 57 of the 59 parishes. And the next question you're going to ask is, which two didn't you get to? those people usually do. And that was our parish of St. Demetrius in Waterloo, Iowa, mm-hmm. and a parish of Holy Trinity in Sioux City, Iowa. Because of that, I began the year on January 6th, the Feast of Epiphany, visiting Waterloo, Iowa. And I will be visiting Sioux City in October, where we will hold our Clergy Lady Assembly. Mm-hmm. We have it every year. Champaign Parish sponsored it last year in 2012. We had over 450 people mm-hmm. coming to your beautiful city. We took over three hotels, and we even, for the first time in history, Skyped in Patriarch Bartholomew from Istanbul.
Oh, my.
Who spoke to us at 9:30 in the morning our time, 5:30 his time. First time it was ever done, and now he's doing it quite readily and quite frequently.
Well, as I understand it, Bishop Bartholomew is well acquainted with the United States. I think he taught at Harvard, or did he go to Harvard?
Archbishop Demetrius taught at Harvard.
Archbishop Demetrius taught at Harvard.
And he also received his PhD from Harvard.
Ah, right.
Bishop Bartholomew has visited the United States numerous times. He's been to Chicago and the Chicago metropolis. Mm-hmm.
He was also awarded the
Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, right.
So he's very familiar with the United States. But mm-hmm. Archbishop Demetrius, who was also my professor in the seminary, mm-hmm. Is the Archbishop of America. He taught at Harvard Divinity School and also received his PhD from Harvard Divinity School.
Okay, so your resolution hopefully will pass this spring, and what is your timeline for getting all 50 states to finalize, and then what are you going to do with the collected resolution?
This committee, because of the structure of the Archdiocese of America, we are only responsible for the six states of the Midwest. It would be inappropriate for this committee and myself to enter into someone else's jurisdiction, someone else's metropolis.
So, the autocephalous tradition is wonderful in the Eastern Orthodox tradition.
You
have a lot to teach us about democracy.
Right, yes, but this obeyed. It's definitely obeyed. And the archon, the gentleman in charge of this whole resolution,
Stefan
Jorgensen,
who's
from
Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. He's the... really the spearhead and the soul behind this resolution nationally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once he gets all of them, I think it sends a message to Turkey on what we're desirous of.
What's the timeline, do you think, for getting
I do know that he's had contacts with the states that are not in there and that he is working hard for that. They all work on their own separate time scale. So, I mean, I don't think we can put a certain time frame down. But I do know from conversations with him, he has reached out to those, and it's a major issue for him of getting those final ones checked off. So.
In Illinois, we're hoping at the end of May, which is the end of the session, so the spring session. So we're hoping by the end of this May we'll have this passed.
Well, the five resolutions are fairly important. Sounds to me like this is urgent business. Do you hope that within a year you'll be able to get a message sent to the government?
I hope so. It's certainly not more than 2 years, hopefully less than two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm optimistic that it'll be this year. There's not many states left. What is it, seven?
Seven after ours.
Mm-hmm. Eight states. It's not a lot.
Right.
I think it's very possible and also probable.
Right.
Got to be done this year.
And I think the message is elevated, too, because especially for Illinois, is that Illinois is the home state of the President of the United States.
Right.
And I think internationally it is well known that this is the home state of the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So when they see a resolution like this, I mean, some people could look at it and say, what effect can Illinois have on international politics? I think it could have a major impact when they see that has the stamp of the President coming behind it.
And the archons may very well pursue a national policy with this. Of course, we don't know. We can't speak for them. But once they have all 50 states in approval, then obviously something will probably follow in that direction.
I grew up in Texas. When did you get them to pass it?
I don't have the date.
Never mind. All right. Well, listen, I thank you all very much. We've been talking to His Grace, the Greek Orthodox Bishop Demetrios, who has come down to Champaign to talk with local people who are interested in getting a resolution passed in front of the Illinois Senate urging greater religious liberty in Turkey for the ecumenical
Patriarchate.
Fascinating conversation, thoroughly enjoyed it. We've also been talking to John Ackerman and Frank Liguras, who have been on the committee to push this conversation. Thank you all very much for being with us. It was a very stimulating and educational conversation.
Well, thank you.
I learned a great deal, even though I teach religious studies.
Well, thank you very much for having us here today. We do appreciate it.
This is Keeping the Faith. Join us again next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
I'm Diane Nolan, host of WILL-TV's Mid-American Gardener. This summer, you can join me on a unique journey to England to discover some of the country's most famous gardens. On the 9-day tour, we'll explore Castle Howard, Hidcote Manor, the Cotswolds Villages, Sissinghurst Gardens, the Hampton Court Flower Show, and much more. For more information, call 217-333-7300.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.